Hi, I'm Joe Montaldo, and you're listening to United Public Radio.
You are listening to United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5, New Orleans.
You want to learn about aliens, extraterrestrials, UFOs, visitations, military abductions? Join Joe Montaldo on Wednesday night, 8 to 10 p.m. for his episodes of UFO Undercover.
The UPRN family of shows would like to take a moment to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in to UPRNTalkRadio.com along with 107.7 FM New Orleans. Broadcasting on multiple platforms like Live 365, Ustream, and Shoutcast has made the UPRN the longest running, highly rated, and best source of quality, unique programming that is not afraid of the status quo in alternative media. This station has a solid course of shows and hosts that refuse to get stuck in a rut or be overrun by a groupthink mentality, because station owner, host, and iCar founder Joe Montaldo knows the value of letting his talented stable of hosts grow uninhibited. In this genre, that's an accomplishment which many in alternative radio are striving for but are left consistently wanting. This is all made possible because of you, the listener, that tunes in live every night, who can tell the difference that independent thinking makes. The best way to show our appreciation is to thank you and continue to allow our listeners the ability to download the archives of all the shows free of charge on iTunes, Podbean, and SoundCloud. No monthly fees, no cost to download individual shows, and none of the constant hassling for donations. That's the UPRNradio.com difference. So stick around, there's much more to come with new shows on the way. For now, feel free to join your favorite show live in the Pal Talk chat room, easily accessible off UPRNTalkRadio.com, and share the experience of listening live with other listeners from around the world. So thanks for listening, and thank you for being a part of the UPRNTalkRadio.com family of listeners.
Come check out Christina George's new show, Paranormal Connections, only on United Public Radio, Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. See you Monday. Hi, come check out Christina George's new show, Aliens, UFOs, and Beyond, Thursday night, 8 p.m. See you Thursday, Jeff.
Hi there, this is Dave Scott from Spaced Out Radio, and you're listening to the United Public Radio Network live on 107.5 FM in New Orleans and 160 countries around the world. You are listening to United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com. 107.5, New Orleans.
You are invited to the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show every Friday night on United Public Radio Network from 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time, 12 to 1 a.m. Eastern Time, with your spiritual warrior goddess, Kathy Bilski. Kathy will share all the old truths the Illuminati tries to keep secret. Kathy also gives you the opportunity to join in with planetary healing light work that will help us manifest World Enlightenment 2016. So let's get high and fly into new possibilities. So join Kathy every Friday night on UPRN, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show, a very powerful happening.
You are listening to United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5, New Orleans. Spaced Out Radio is glad to be part of the United Public Radio Network family as we round out your night 7 days a week starting at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. Our goal is to give you that paranormal listening option that you've been missing all these nights. You can join me, Dave Scott, Monday through Friday, and James Tyson on the weekend. We promise to deliver the fastest 3 hours of radio right to wherever you are. And check out our website as well, spacedoutradio.com. Are you experienced?
Yeah. I'm feeling good right now. It's just one of them days where
everything going right. Everybody come together, let's go, yo.
Hey, I'm feeling alright, just one of them days, everything go right now. Like to keep this vibe throughout the day, if that's okay.
Happy New Year on Discovery Paranormal. This is United Public Radio Network, UPRN, talkradio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, and all that good stuff. You know what? I'm going to start off by saying, what do you guys think about the moon? Do you guys think it's hollow? And how about the Earth? Do you think it's hollow? Or, and I'm not talking about hollow Earth, like hollow like a basketball. I'm saying it's got many layers and levels, and scientists believe that the Earth has oceans inside of it that have more water than the ocean on the surface, right? So what I want to do tonight, and you know on the show, I like to talk about evidence, and I like to lean into subjects, and you know, and it's fun to think outside the box and assume and theorize and do all that, but more importantly, I think it's fun to present evidence from the horse's mouth. And I know that a lot of times we can't believe the horse, right? So when NASA says something, and it's not in the way of like, okay, they're exposing something, they're letting out some amazing information that's going to blow your mind, you know, it's more of a subtle type of release. You know, like when they released the tapes of I think it was Apollo 10, how it went around the moon. Well, they went around the dark side of the moon for an hour. They lose contact because they're going around the moon, and there's no radio. You know, radio waves are line of sight. They don't go around things. To make radio waves go around something, you need to have antennas so that one antenna can grab the signal from another and so on and so on and so on. So that's why when they're going around the dark side of the moon, they're not in contact. Instead of hearing nothing, which is what they should have heard, a dead silence, not even feedback, because as the systems in this aircraft, they knew every little tiny thing that there was. If there was any kind of noise, these astronauts were trained so well back then that they would have known what the noise was. It didn't matter, even if it was like just a little flick of an electronic kind of flick, they would know exactly what it was, okay? So they're going around the dark side of the moon, and it's, I mean, you can look, like, you can go on YouTube and you can find these videos that have this audio also. So you can go, you know, so they're going around the dark side of the moon, and they're hearing what they said, wow, it's some space age music type of thing, you know. You hear all the astronauts talking to each other about it, that this is happening, this is what they're hearing, and then they got past, you know, the point of darkness where they were able to communicate back with NASA again, you know, and then they didn't even know whether to report it and discuss it among themselves, because astronauts and pilots and all these people, air traffic controllers and anybody in the know in the sky that's looking at the sky are all discouraged to report things like UFOs, you know, unidentified flying objects, right? The government went through the trouble of naming it UFOs or anything like that, okay? Or, you know, whatever. So, it's interesting that I listened to it. It didn't sound like music to me. It's like people collectively screaming. And then I know that you have planets, that Jupiter, Saturn, that let off a lot of noise, and I talked about this recently on the show. In fact, several shows that I've done in the past couple of months have all had something to do with also this show tonight, and I think it's just presenting evidence of what's coming out, and then I like to compare things too, you know. But I know a lot of scientists, and a lot of them, well, some of them, think outside the box, and we like to just sit around and talking about what could be, you know, instead of talking about what is. And we don't even know what is. You know, we've researched maybe 3% of the entire ocean. 3%. There's 97% of ocean that we have never researched, that we don't know what's in there. We don't know what's there, right? I talked recently on the show about sounds coming from 7 miles beneath the surface of the ocean. And these sounds were recorded. They are electronic sounds. You know, it's not some whale. They said it was a horny whale. It was a horny whale. I mean, people are going to believe that. People will believe that. You know, look at religion. People will believe it. If you sell it, good enough to somebody, they're going to believe it, you know. But fine. These sounds have been recorded in different places around the world, and if when you listen to all these sounds, even though they're all different, they all sound electronic, manufactured, okay? So, but getting back to the moon. We'll talk about the moon in a minute. Let's talk about Mars, all right? Because I actually know some people who have worked on the Mars Lander project up at Cornell. And every time Cornell does something, you know, has an event, I go up there because I live 5 minutes away. I go up there and I harass people with questions, you know, because it's fascinating. You know, when you have all these physicists sitting in front of you, 7 or 8 or 9 people, that have worked on these projects and going into space and actually, you know, these guys are the ones who... and in the seeing work and boy, that all the species on this planet from low to high, you know that there's a varied, unbelievable amount of life just in this one place alone. And we're in just one little tiny particle of the universe, of the known universe and universe and whatever, and dimensional energy and whatever. Because there's a lot of whatevers. And just as humans, we're getting into dark matter, and we're getting into, you know, antimatter, things that were dreamt of. It was a dream at one time. This was not a reality. Now it's a reality. So what's going to be a reality? What are we dreaming of now? And what's going to be our reality tomorrow? Right? So in 1998, images from the Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft revealed something startling from Phobos, which is the moon of Mars. The unusual large, it's a very large moon orbiting Mars, right? It appeared to be very tall, 400 feet high, rectangular-shaped object jutting straight up and casting a long shadow on the surface of Phobos. Now, there are pictures of this online. You can find very easily. And think about it, 400 feet high. That's an incredible height. A perfect rectangular shape. Even when it casts shadow, it's a perfect rectangular shape. Right? Like it was manufactured. Like, wow, this is just some natural stone sticking up, but yet it's unprecedented. And, like, you know, you don't find anything else like that around. So a lot of scientists are going to say, hey, it's just a natural rock. You know, but is it real? And even if we see something that we can't explain, we know that it could be, you know, unless you can disprove something or discount something, you can't say it's not. I can't say, well, it's definitely not manufactured. It's definitely metal, right? I can't say that because I don't have the data to back it up. I don't have the information to back that up. So I can't say that. So let's suppose that we find a perfectly shaped pyramid on another planet, and we can't think of a way that it formed naturally. So what does that say? That say that something intelligent made it? Does that say that something came along and manufactured that? Yo, you're going to say, well, I don't know that. You're going to say, I don't know how it got there. I have no idea. And then from that point on, when you say you have no idea, you start looking for evidence and putting evidence together and then trying to find out how something could have gotten there. Now, those questions are going to lead you to answers that are out of this world, beyond our technology, beyond what we are as people. But to say that that world doesn't exist would be ignorant. Because obviously, there are things bigger than we are. Obviously, there's technology that goes further than us, because further than our own, because we have drawings on cave walls that point to aircraft coming down from the sky with people and tools and stuff and whatever. We have civilization after civilization after civilization telling you stories. You got the Hopi Indians saying, telling stories about the ant people who came out of the ground, taught them how to grow food and do all these things. And wow. Are they all high? Are they all just like, hey, you know, making up some stories? Here's a great story to tell about the ant people. When it became part of their culture, you know, maybe so. Look at Jesus Christ. Look at stuff like that. Look at things that become part of people's culture. You know, so what we know is the factual evidence in front of us. What we don't know is everything else. And I think that the factual evidence in front of us, we can start, you know, discriminating the universe and seeing what happens. I mean, people think about black holes and what a black hole could be, or theorize a wormhole and what a wormhole can be. But they're all theories, unless you're there studying it. And you can't be, because the thing will suck you in, and you'd be gone. Okay? So, it's like that. We're just little peas that can't, we can't even explore our own planet. There are places we can't even go. You know? And then people are like, what? We don't even know what to deal with. We're like fleas on a dog. And we have no idea what the dog is even, or where, what it's doing, or where it's going. We can kind of look to the stars and say, okay, and we figured out calendar and stuff like that, you know? But there's a lot of interesting information out there, and I think people are reaching out and looking to understand more about our galaxy. And I think people now have way more of an open mind than people back in the 1950s, for instance, where if you said, hey, there are UFOs, people would flip out. Most likely, especially people who are like religious, because we've seen that. They like to flip out. I think they enjoy the drama, flip it out. But in our galaxy, you know, what are we talking about? Something like 400 billion stars? And out of all those stars, there are plenty of Earth-like planets out there. You know? So you're talking about hundreds of billions of planets. So it's not about whether there's life out there. It's about how much life is out there and what kind of life that is. And just like when I talked about those energy bursts coming, you know, out in the galaxy, and then these scientists are receiving these bursts, they think it's some kind of communication. Should you reach out to something like that? They're getting a message ready to send out. But should you reach out? And who should do the message? You know? I think Kanye West is a good choice, man, because people definitely want to come. If you wanted to scare an alien species away, come on, man. The guy's got, like, yellow and pink hair now. I shouldn't buzz his ball. It's not fun to make fun of people who are mentally ill, man. You know what I mean? I'll get off that. I just thought of aliens and that, and it kind of popped up. I'm sorry. So, basically, we don't know anything about anything about anything. We don't even know the news today. We can't even trust each other. We don't even know what's going on. We don't even know what's going on in our own house. You don't even know if your spouse is cheating on you right now. You don't know anything, nothing, nothing, anything. And in the world of probability, you don't even know what's going to happen from one minute to the next. that anything could happen at any time, you know? So when it comes to exploration and reaching out to the stars, I think that we need to take all of this into account of what we are and what we want from that. You know, so now, of course, mining companies are talking about going out in space and mining, you know, they're talking gold, but of course they're going to find elements that are, you know, way better than gold, because it'll be new and it'll be in a small amount, and people are going to want it, especially if they can use things in industry, you know. So yeah, and I've long said that the first companies in space are going to be mining companies, because it makes sense, you know, and that's what they're looking to do. They want to put a moon base out there, have a base on the moon. So let's talk about the moon, because we all like the moon. We like to watch the full moon. People dance under the moon. People pray to the moon, right? I think that we don't need to look much past the moon, you know, to understand what we are. So also, let's talk about how other moons and other... There, our moon is unprecedented because of the orbit that it's on and the accuracy of it, and also how it counterbalances things that happen on the Earth, not in nature, you know, tides and things like that. So it's a natural satellite we can look at it as. And I think that when you look at other moons and other planets, it definitely doesn't have the same thing, the same nature and everything. And also scientists say they don't know how it got there, whether the Earth grabbed the moon when it was passing by, or, you know, in the explosion, it just happened there. And I don't know. They don't know. They have no clue. They have no idea of why. They have more reasons to say why it shouldn't be there than why it is. Okay? So, in 1969, at the end of the Apollo 12 moon mission, which concluded the first ever deliberate spacecraft crash, okay, and maybe a lot of you don't know this. This is interesting, because this tells you something. This is evidence. So listen to me. Scientists wanted to know more about the moon's geological makeup, so they devised an experiment to measure lunar vibration. Lunar module pilot Alan Bean and Mission Control Commander Pete Conrad, the third and fourth men to walk on the moon, set up seismographic equipment on the lunar surface prior to rejoining Command Module Pilot Richard Gordon, who had orbited the moon during the mission. We jettisoned the lunar module and it impacted the moon just at the right spot. Bean reports on Are We Alone? This is an excerpt from this report, okay? This was amazing. This is science fiction, except you're living it, Bean said. The scientist said, let's separate the lunar module and have it impact the moon just at the right distance away from the size monitor that we put there. And we'll measure how it vibrates. So basically, they're going to take the lunar module and smash it into the moon. And they have seismometers down there to measure the vibrations to see what happens, okay? So they're testing the density, basically, of the moon, right? So you take that, bang, this thing would hit the moon, and what? What do you think? What in your wildest imagination do you think it could possibly be? What happened? I bet what I tell you, you're not going to believe. You're going to be like, wow. Because it's beyond people's assumption of what could happen, right? Boom, hits the surface, and makes a hole, boom. You know, it picks up some dust, and they get a Richter scale, kind of, you know, 4 or 5, 0.0, like if you're having an earthquake, some kind of impact, right? So when Peter Conrad was taken back on board the command module, the lunar module ascent stage was released, headed back to the moon's surface to crash about 50 miles from where the astronauts had walked on the surface. The used module impacted the moon at 3,800 miles per hour, creating its own crater. What the seismographic equipment recorded startled the people in mission control. And it registered the moon ringing like a bell. The moon, so this thing, the moon starts ringing like a bell. This moonquake continued reverberating for more than 30 minutes. So you guys out there tell me that if you strike something like that, and it rings for over 30 minutes, over half an hour, like a bell, is the moon solid? Or is the moon hollow? And if it rang like a bell and had that kind of resonance, out there in space even, what is it made of? Not cheese, like a lot of my friends think. You know? It's interesting to think of. It's evidence pointing to something, is what I'm saying. It's a real thing that happened. It's not some conspiracy theorist talking about what could be or what they think is. This is real. All right? This is NASA talking. This is what they've got. So this rang for 30 minutes. So it causes a lot of people to speculate our natural satellite is hollow. So researchers, believers, and skeptics all agreed that it's not solid. And they don't know what it's made out of. And we haven't gone back, have we? Which is interesting. I put that together with, you know, when I talked to, you know, a few shows back about the secret moon base that people who worked in the government had high-level clearance, they had seen pictures of, you know, back in the day, before they even landed on the moon. And they detonated a bomb up there, too. This is all on the dark side of the moon, part of the moon that we can't see. You know what I mean? So, well, you tell me, a skyscraper-high monolith on a Martian moon? Really? You know, a possible hollow moon? I don't know. I think you have, and then, you know, you hear, like, these reports, even from back in the day, the strange metal craft that passed over Madagascar, plunging its capital city into darkness for 10 minutes. You know, I mean, that's like some science fiction movie type of stuff. Oh, you're telling me all the people there are lying? They're all lying? They're all making it up? It's just a fun thing to make up in Madagascar? How about when Texas police answered calls about a 200-foot flying object? And, you know, again, that was harassing people. Like, you have all these phone calls coming in, you know, and air traffic control getting. So, I mean, you know, we can talk about the stories and stories and stories all over the world. You know, even stories about the Iranian jet fighter pilots who got involved in a dogfight with a UFO. And they lost. Okay? So there's a lot of stuff like that, a lot of stories. And I like to focus on stories that are credible. You know, there are people that, and with me it's more of a feeling too, but I like governmental sources, even though I know a lot of them are full of it. But in all of the lies that they tell, there's a glimmer of truth. You know, so when they say weather balloon, they're saying that something was there, and they're just telling you weather balloon. You know, it wasn't a weather balloon. That was a story back in the day, weather balloon. You know, it was a weather balloon. It wasn't, you know, what did I see in the sky? People know it wasn't a weather balloon, but now more people have cameras than ever. Every goddamn camera. You can't do anything without getting someone taking a picture. Everybody, nearly everybody, they got a phone in their hand, a cell phone, they have a camera. On top of that, there are governmental cameras. There are cameras on businesses, security cameras. You could probably track somebody in one place to the other if you had the right application to do it. By using all of these cameras, right? So I'm going to read from you. I'm going to read you guys a little of this. This is a report that was done by people who believe the Earth is hollow. Also, not a hollow in the sense like the moon is hollow. Hollow in the sense that it has large hollow pockets that are occupied by anything from aliens to Nazis. And it's funny. It's funny to think about these people, because there are a lot of people that said they found the center of the earth. And then, you know, we've seen this in movies, and it's been around since back in the day. So, interesting. For many centuries, humankind has dreamt of inner worlds. Numerous writers have been inspired by the idea, not least Tarzan creator Edgar Rice Burroughs. At the Earth's Core, 1914, Edgar Allan Poe, the narrative of, I love Edgar Allan Poe, I gotta tell you, the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket, 1838, and most famously Jules Verne, whose 1864 novel, A Journey to the Center of the Earth, has been adapted numerous times for stage and screen. Thousands of contemporary theorists discuss what is commonly referred to as the greatest ever secret on internet forums. So, you know, you're going to have people out there who are like, and you can find all these conspiracy theorists on YouTube. People even say that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, I'm suspicious of that. you know what? I think that I like evidence, and you can either show me the evidence or you can not and just talk about something. You know, I was in the bar business, man, in the club business. You know what? You hear drunks talking all night long about nothing. You know, there's, hey, I got a good deal, or let me tell you this story. You know, it's all bull crap. So a lot of that's on YouTube now, without the booze. You know what I mean? So, all right, let me get back to this. On YouTube, videos claim that the satellite images on Google Earth have been altered to cover up the existence of the holes, while other videos claim the holes are there for all to see. Ancient Greeks, Tibetan Buddhists, and Christians all located their iterations of hell in caverns under the mantle. Pilgrims used to journey to Station Island off the coast of Cold Donegal, where they believed there existed an entrance to purgatory. While the old legends of Mexico describe a mountain cave near Ojinago inhabited by devilish creatures from the way down deep. The 18th century, so I mean, these are multiple civilizations all believing in the same type of thing. Do you think that it was just they all theorized this at the same time? Or just people started telling stories, I wonder what's under there, I wonder what's down there? How about, why the hell are we even here? How about that? The 18th century astronomer Royal Edmund Halley believed that unusual compass readings could be explained by the fact that the planet was composed of a hollow shell. Two inner concentric shells and an innermost core about the diameter of the planet Venus, Mars, Mercury, respectively. One of the most famous hollow earth theorists and a true predecessor of Thompson was a veteran of the 1812 Anglo-American War, John Fitts. In his book, Banvard's Folly, Paul Collins recounts the theory of concentric spheres and polar voids that preoccupied the soldier. Sims published a pamphlet in which he wrote, I declare the earth is hollow and habitable within, containing a number of solid concentric spheres, one within another, and that it is open at the poles 12 to 16 degrees. He pledged his life to promoting his notion, boldly declaring, I am ready to explore the hollow. He toured the U.S. with a handmade wooden globe that opened out to reveal its secret layers. How cool is that, though? I mean, and people, he's going to go around, and people are going to think this guy's a nut. Some people are going to believe him. Maybe 3% of people are going to believe him. And then the rest of the people, some people have no opinion. And then you're going to have probably more than half of people not believing him. And then those people who don't believe him are going to shame talk the other people that do or are on the fence. You know, because it's really about popular opinion kind of controls what goes on, you know? So, a lot of people that didn't believe started believing because they started seeing all this evidence come down the pike, right? And then this dude starts petitioning the government to finance his invention. You know, he thinks that the government's got something to gain if he could find the center of the earth. You know, so on March 7th, 1822, Senator Richard Thompson presented a case to Congress that Sims be supplied with the equipment of two vessels of 250 and 300 tons for the expedition, and the granting of such other aids as government may deem, he requests. So think about it. Now here's the government in 1822 giving this guy a couple ships and said, okay, go find the center of the earth, dude. You know what I mean? That's so you have a governmental action. People believed in him enough where this will go on, and obviously the senator is sticking his neck out, right? Unless he owned the ships that the guy used and, you know, made some money from the deal. So during the debate, it was suggested that the Committee for Foreign Relations become involved, as the trip may well bring Sims and his crew into contact with new races of interior people. And this is the deal. This is what's going on. But the motion was to fail. Seven further bills were presented to the House. Not one succeeded. Sims spent the rest of his life lecturing and lobbying for action. In May 1829, writes Collins, Sims died believing right up to the end that the greatest discovery in human history had eluded his grasp. Wow. But he stuck to his guns. He believed in what, you know, he wasn't, let me tell you, all right, I'm going to lecture you guys for a minute. It's important to believe in yourself, and you live life to your own expectations, or you live life with no expectations. But if you live life under somebody else's expectation, you'll never live your own life. So we live our lives not for the acknowledgement of other people around us, but we live our lives for ourselves and what we can do for ourselves and the people around us. So those people with us are going to benefit from our kindness and our love, and then us going further and not being held back. So you can't live by somebody else's rule. You got to be your own. You got to live by your own. So the inner circle of people, let's say they found this, they found the inside of the earth and the hole, blah, blah, blah. Among them is this guy, Carl Unger, a German sailor, said to be part of a 1943 U-boat expedition, which is a submarine underwater boat, to the South Pole. The submarine apparently entered the hollow earth through an underwater passageway, and its crew were greeted by an advanced civilization and a place called Rainbow Island. And you might think, okay, maybe this guy was underwater too long, you know what I mean? But Hitler was hardly a believer. Hitler actually believed in all kinds of stuff, and psychics and mediums, and, you know, he tried using all that to his advantage. A big believer, and because of that, all the other generals and muckety-mucks got involved because they were trying to impress, you know, Hitler. So some conspiracy theorists are convinced that he escaped the Hollow Earth, and at the end of the Second World War, that hole is still there. Then there's Admiral Richard Byrd. Now, this is the most interesting part, all right? Because, you know, maybe this U-boat commander was one way, and another guy who has, in the 1800s, has a dream for an expedition. But let's go by the evidence. Let's talk about the evidence on this earth. We know that we have civilization after civilization that tells stories of people coming from space or people coming from under the ocean or off the ground, right? You have Pulapunku, which I bring up all the time. You know, up there in the Andes Mountains, there's no reason for any civilization even to be there, where there's no trees, where the air is thin. I mean, we can talk all day long. And also, they built a wall around the place like they wanted to keep somebody out, so obviously there was somebody they're trying to keep out. But okay, no real natural resources, very hard to grow stuff, maybe impossible. you know, stones that weighed hundreds of tons, and they got them over 60 miles. So then you have these people who are indigenous, who tell the tale, who go in the caves, who draw things about ships with energy beams coming out of it, moving the rocks and moving things around, and, you know, tall men with tools coming out. This wasn't put there by modern-day people who are trying to hoax you. This was put there by the people at the time, describing in the most their most simplest terms of what they were witnessing, what they could see, what they're experiencing, what their perception is, anyway, of that experience. Okay? So I don't know about Label Island. Sounds beautiful. Sounds great. But Richard Byrd, okay, highly decorated U.S. Naval officer, you know? I mean, he was the big cheese, literally. His secret diary had gotten out, and excerpts of the secret diary, before they were able to take it off the market, it had circulated, you know, people had made copies of pages and whatever and put it out there. And his handwriting, his words, that type of stuff. And it's not disputed that these things that he wrote in his diary are even wrong. Nobody even said, hey, it's all bullcrap, or it's made as a hoax, right? Anyway. So in 1947, he led an expedition to the North Pole, right? And I've heard tales from the North and South Pole. And also there's this mass in the South Pole that has a lot of gravity to it. And then it's got maybe three times the average Earth gravity, which is incredible. And they don't know what that is, and it's under the ice, right? So in 1947, he led an expedition to the North Pole. It is believed to contain descriptions of land full of lush lakes, greenery, and woolly mammoths. So Byrd was actually in the South Pole at the time, which is weird, because this is the way they kind of record history. Anyway, let me get that said. The South Pole is where it's at, as far as I'm concerned. You know, the government, it's funny, when they try to lie, they don't do a very good job of it. And when they try to fudge things, they still don't do a good job of it. So I'm going to read you actually what we know. I'm going to take away all of what the government writes about North Pole, South Pole, but I know at the South Pole, in which we have, we have stations there that are monitoring stations for scientists and that type of thing, military also. So, I mean, but not the South Pole, a little tiny itty-bitty area, but the rest of it, we don't even know it's there. And there's an area that they don't go, specifically. So that's, when there's an area someone doesn't go, are you not allowed to go? Like there's a lake in Puerto Rico that's locked down by the government. You're not allowed to go there. You got to think, why? What's the deal? What's going to be the horrible thing that's going to happen to you if you go there? You know? So, obviously, they have a reason for locking stuff down, right? So, check this out. In Wednesday, March 5th, 1947 edition of the Chilean newspaper, El Mercurio, it read, this is when they interviewed Admiral Byrd. So obviously he was at the South Pole. Obviously they were in Chile. Obviously he was going back and forth. Admiral Richard E. Byrd warned today that the United States should adopt measures of protection against the possibility of an invasion of the country by a hostile plane coming from the polar regions. The Admiral explained that he was not trying to scare anyone, but the cruel reality is that in case of a new war, the United States could be attacked by planes flying over one or both poles. Now, you would say on the surface, this is just strategic, you know, because you can fly, if you have planes that can fly over the poles, you can attack those countries and, you know, whatever. It's a faster way of getting there, right? Which we do. We did with B-2 bombers when we attacked Iraq and all that stuff. So let's talk about Operation High Jump. Now, Operation High Jump, officially titled the United States Navy Antarctic Development Program from 1946 to 1947, was a United States Navy operation organized by Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd. Officer in charge, Task Force 68, and led by Rear Admiral Richard H. Cruzan. Now, Cruzan went on to write books about these experiences, and you can find those out there pretty easily. So, commanding officer for Task Force 68, while I were there, Operation High Jump commenced 26 August 1946 and ended in late February 1947. Task Force 68 included 4,700 men, 13 ships, and 33 aircraft. Operation High Jump's primary mission was to establish the Antarctic Research Base Little America 4. All right? Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we don't know what happened from them going there and doing all of this. Now, this is an account that happened from Operation High Jump. This is what ended it in 1947. It says, for those who have read some of the actual reports from Operation High Jump, you'll notice that a battleship was sunk while others were badly damaged, and they refer to several other amazing observations. So these are the things that Admiral Byrd wrote down in his notes of what was happening at the time that they were trying to wrap their heads around. When they got there, they were attacked. So circular craft, they get there, they're trying to establish a base. They're going all around the Antarctic. They're going back and forth to Chile where they established another base, you know, to get provisions and things like that, what they needed, and they were going back and forth. So at some point in 1947, in August, they encountered this area that has this heavy, this large object that's under the ice. And they don't know what it is, right? But they know that it's got three times the amount of gravity that you would experience anywhere else on the planet. So he says, in his own words, circular craft emerged from the water at high speed. And were not destroyed by any kind of impact. These circular craft used some kind of unknown light beam weapons. These circular craft moved at incredible speeds. These circular craft were He very specifically wrote about the circular aircraft and how amazing they were able to fly, things he's never seen before. And he wasn't the only one to make these observations. Other people did too. A lot of the men were sworn to secrecy. They lost a battleship. So these guys blundered into something that they shouldn't have, and they were made to leave. And since it was the U.S. military, we're talking about World War II, after World War II, you know, people were a little gung-ho. The soldiers there probably thought, hey, we can fight. Sure. And then here come these circular craft with light beam weapons taking their ships out, destroying their planes flying into some kind of forest field, getting completely destroyed. Write about these things. Think about that. Then you think about Roswell, things like that, you know? You think about other places where, you know, we have secret projects going on, black projects, But yet, where did the technology come from? You know, and leaps and bounds of technology, including computer technology. Where did this all come from? Not that long ago, we didn't have any of that. Nothing. Barely even a calculator. So here we are with all this electronic equipment and you know, devices that can store, devices the size of my fingernail that could store unbelievable amounts of data. And that's just us, that's just humans. And any kind of extraterrestrial or terrestrial. Obviously, they were here before us. Maybe they are us. Maybe they made us. You can talk to a lot of UFO people. They all have their conspiracy theories. They all have their theories in general. And it's nice to think outside the box. It's fun. I'm just sitting around. You can destroy that environment just by adding some bacteria. So I think that any kind of beings or extraterrestrial, leftover terrestrial that's here obviously already knows these things, you know? And then we talk about things like Chupacabra, really? And things like, in places like Puerto Rico, they found Chupacabra, people tell tales of it anyway, in Texas, South Florida. That sounds like some alien pet. The thing drinks blood. It's got big glowing eyes. Yeah, even the police chief in Puerto Rico saw it. It was in front of his car. He jumped out and ran. You know? I think the police chief would get out and try to defend himself. Well, I guess if you're having something stand in front of you that's 5 or 6 feet tall with big red glowing eyes and spiny fingers, unless you have some kind of zest for exploration or investigation like me, if that thing popped up in front of my Jeep, I'd be happy to jump out and try to find out what the hell it is. Any action, I'll defend myself, man. You know? But really, it's just another mystery that we know about and tell tale with some kind of evidence, because they do have the goats and chickens that have no blood, and they call, some places the vampire creature and that type of thing. You can go on YouTube and look at people's hunting cam videos, and they put out a hunting cam to see what kind of game is around, and they capture the weirdest stuff. Yeah, some of it's bull crap, of course. People love to hoax things, and with computers you can hoax all day long. You can hoax all day long. You can make up the most convincing-looking Steven Spielberg alien type of stuff that there is. But not all of it's like that, you know? And just like when people send me pictures of ghosts, and they say, hey, do you think this is a ghost or whatever? And I give my opinion. It's not just the look of it, it's the feeling, too. You know, and I've seen pictures of ghosts. I've got them. I'm taking them myself. So I know that it didn't come from somebody else. It didn't come from some other source. They're mine. The investigations I've done, you know. So, and then we put them online on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/discoveryparanormal, all one word. And then through America. You know, I try not to edit the shows that much. And I like to just shoot and sort of put it out there. You know, edit it to where it actually tells a story because there's a lot of downtime and shooting. But it's real. I'm not going to sit there and fake it. I don't have time for that. You know, why would I do that? It's a waste of time. You know, am I trying to affect somebody else and say, ooh, look at this. If I was going to do that, I could really fake some stuff. I would have garbage cans flying through the air knocking people in the head if I was going to fake things. You know, I'm not saying that it could happen in the future. And if it happens, I didn't fake it because there's no point in doing that. You know, there are people that have no lives and they want to fake people out, whether it comes from a UFO or whatever, and blah, 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 blah. But then there are things that are unexplained, and that's the world that I like. And that's the world that I like to investigate. And I'm willing to talk to anyone who knows anything about anything as long as they know what they're talking about. I don't want to hear bullcrap. I don't want to hear your idea. I want to hear your evidence. I want to hear the story of the evidence. I want to see what feels, man. Because that's about exploration. Really, we've only explored 3% of the ocean, and you can say that you know what's in the ocean. Of course you don't know what's in the ocean. You know? We've only explored that. We don't even know what's going on our own damn planet, let alone space. We don't even know what's happening on the moon, let alone in space. And that outer space, you know? We can't even get to Pluto. You got a lander going out there or whatever. You got some satellites floating around. You got some orbiters, you know, some spacecraft to check it out. We can't get there. So think about that, how little we really are in this universe. And at the same time, how big we really are in the universe. I think that people's egos are way out of control. And we need to understand where we're at. We're kind of like an aggressive bacteria in the universe. So I'll leave it at that. Calling all mankind an aggressive bacteria. We are the fleas on the dog that it is. So whatever. I hope you got something out of the show. You know, I mean, a lot of cool information, a lot of great data from NASA, from other governmental organizations, from Admiral Byrd. I think you can put that all together and see that something is going on. And it's been going on for many years. And maybe we're on the verge of some kind of an announcement because I'm seeing things in the media more and more and more about these, you know, UFO stuff and whatever. I'm just seeing more and more of it. I think people are happier to talk about it these days, and it's not such a taboo subject as it was. So this is Michael Angley saying Happy New Year 2017. We're going to have a great year of exploration, a great year of hunting, a great year of looking, a great year of laughing and having a good time. So I love you all. This is Discovery Paranormal on UPRN, United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 Pastor Sierra.
This is Michael Angley of Michael Angley Live, Discovery Paranormal, and the Daily Update with Michael Angley. For the best news and commentary, tune in to Michael Angley Live every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. For the best paranormal talk in town, tune in to Discovery Paranormal every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. And check out UPRN, United Public Radio Network, every day for the Daily Update with Michael Angley. All on United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.7 New Orleans.
Hi, I'm Joe Mentaldo, and you're listening to United Public Radio.
You are listening to United Public Radio Network.